Wired Unplugged.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Wired Unplugged episode 19. And I'm back with the main man, Ann Cooper.
I'm plugged back in, Jake. I'm alive.
Plugged back in. He's plugged in. Yeah. Oh, man. It's good to have you back, mate. Yeah.
It's good to be here.
Yeah. Oh, you're better.
I'm on the mend. I lost some weight in my face because I was quite unwell. But
is that a benefit? I was going to say good for you, but no, also, it's
one of those things because I've started a fitness thing anyway.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's great, but also it's not the best. It's not a good way to lose weight.
Yeah.
The process of it was horrendous. Yeah. And I never want to go through that again.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say that, hey, that happened. I'm going to use it now
to start the momentum. Yeah, you got the momentum right on, man. Well, listen, I want to start by being a British stereotype. How's the weather over there, mate?
Cause it's
here,
hot, man.
Here, man. Here in North Wales, ooh, yeah, we're sweltering. So look, guys, girls, everybody who wants to let us know the weather forecast, you can do that by emailing us at unplugged@wireproductions.com. We don't just take the sort of Celsius and Fahrenheit metrics. We also take, you know, you can make your own if you want. Make your own, like...
Sweltering.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Listen, you mean, like, on a scale of one to Steve wearing shorts in the last episode, like... How boiling hot is it? You know what I mean?
Did you see over the weekend, I think it was, he broke out his Borat mankini.
I certainly did, yeah. Work from home, the perils of / privileges of. So, yeah.
I'd love to be his next door neighbor, seriously. Just peeking over the head.
The guy's a menace. So, yeah, for those who have not been catching up, like we did an episode last week, an Aaronless episode, it had Gary and Steve joining us to talk about... E3, which wasn't E3, so we can't really call it that. But hey, you know, and in a way, Aaron, I wish he was on there too because there's so.
I'm good. I missed it. I'm good.
Yeah, it was a good one. But listen, we're not talking about that anymore. We're talking strictly about what we've got coming up. We're talking, you know, much like you and your illness, we're taking it. We're running the momentum and we're moving forward. So, coming up this week, we have the Master of Darkness and. Literal dark room expert John Robertson, who, like, how do you describe him? Malevolent presence,
dude. Seriously, like, again, I know I said that I'm sad that I missed last week's episode, but I'm sad that I missed that interview as well because John is a presence.
Exactly.
John is a force.
He is,
and you know, I was intrigued to see how it was going to go for you because, like. You know, John is a man that can go on stage at a comedy gig.
Yeah.
And right at the start, if someone heckles him, he'll throw a set list out and focus on that person for the full hour.
Yeah.
And without any, you know, stops or anything, he's just, I've got you.
Well, I mean, like, we're not giving too many spoilers away. I think we fell in love, to be honest. It went really well.
It's hard
not to. Yeah, no, it went really well. He didn't call me a single expletive. So I feel like I was doing really well. He was on his best behavior, actually. And stick around for that in a bit. So John Robertson talks to us about the dark room. If you've got no idea what that's about, literally neither do we, and we've been watching it for years. He'll tell you a bit more about that. And the book that he's writing and why Americans want you to tone down cannibalism. We got all these revelations still to come. But for now...
That sounds like a John conversation.
Yeah. So... You know, in your absence, we had substitute Minister of Propaganda Steve last week wearing a bowler hat. He spoke a big game about sending you a copy, but a copy. You can tell I work in games, can't you? The original
can you
hat.
Send me a hat skew, please.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What's the redemption key again? So look, you're back, and the king doesn't need to say he's the king, and the Minister of Propaganda doesn't need to say he's the Minister of Propaganda. Hat or no hat, I'm glad you're back. Let's run the rhythm and get into the Wired Propaganda segment.
Propaganda.
Well, it's this time again. Wired never stops. Wired never sleeps. What have we got going on?
I can do. I don't have a hat, so I'm just...
That's it. For anyone who's watching this rather than listening, other hot drinks are available. And for those listening, Aaron was wearing a nondescript cup on his head. for just a few moments. All right.
I appreciate the audio description. It's great. Okay, so the first thing to kick off is we all love a video game announcement. Jake, mm-hmm. I know you are. Mm-hmm. You love a good cheeky little announcement.
Yep.
What we love even more is an announcement of an announcement, right?
Yeah.
And yes, this is a piss take of announcements of announcements. So we made an announcement of an announcement for Arcade Paradise.
Yeah.
And essentially, I can't spoil the announcement, but I can spoil the announcement of the announcement. And that is that the release date for Arcade Paradise, if you're still following, will be announced on July 29th next week. Everyone is encouraged in that minefield of madness of whatever I just said, just to stay tuned to the Wired social channels at Wired P.
It's like an ARG, an alternate reality game, an alternate release date game in this case, yeah. If you want to find out, and it's screwed Aaron's mind up so much that he did accidentally say July 29th when it's June 29th, but this is what happens when there's so many dates being flung about, okay? So
June 29th, next week.
So if you want to get locked, if you want to lose your mind as well, you can by following Wired P and you can understand.
Still June, Jake. Still June.
Just about. All right, don't worry about it. Just about. What else?
No, but I think we're going to have a release date to share, and then everyone can get excited to knowing when they can get their hands on it, because that's what a release date announcement is.
Yeah.
But I think you've probably seen a lot of cool press and some content creator stuff over the last couple of months with Arcade Paradise, and definitely get excited for it. You can essentially you take over your dad's laundromat business, who's played by Doug Cockle, Geralt of Rivia, previous guest of the show. Whose name is Gerald, who is in the Riviera. Gerald of Riviera, strong. And essentially, you take over the laundromat. He wants you to run it try and true, wash clothes, take out the trash, that sort of mumbo jumbo. But you're like, no, not today, Dad of Riviera.
Yeah.
I am making an arcade because I don't like washing clothes, but I do like playing games. And then you can live out your arcade fantasies by building the ultimate arcade paradise. So look forward to it.
Very good. Thank you very much for that. So yeah, stay tuned.
I think I'm still a bit delirious from my illness, to be honest.
YFP, you can, look, as far as you're concerned, mate, do what you want. Right, next, ooh, what have we got coming up?
So good news. If you listen to this now, Deliver Us the Moon is out now on next gen consoles.
Mm. And listen, first of all, congratulations, Coke and team, who were with us just a few weeks ago. Second of all, this is kind of explains again, not trying to justify it too much, but Aaron has to say it's out now. When me and Aaron know it's not out now, we're recording this.
It's hard to say. I'm like, is it?
Every time. Yeah, exactly. So by the time you, dear listener / viewer, watching this, then Deliver Us the Moon will be out on next gen consoles. And if you want to know, straight from the horse's mouth, the detail that they've gone to sort of tinker under the hood and fine-tune this, yeah, so they can get the ray tracing and things like that all in check. You can check a couple of episodes ago where they hear it. They speak everything about it. And
yeah, absolutely. And I think, if you have just got off the back of E3, you would have seen, in the future game show and things, Deliver Us Mars, which is the sequel to Deliver Us the Moon, but it's being published by our friends at Frontier. Yeah. And I think if you want to, it's a step change in terms of gameplay as well. But if you want to know how this series began, definitely check out Deliver Us the Moon, and it'll give you your first good steps for mankind.
Yeah, very, 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 very good. That was a temple tapper there. It took me a while and I was like, very good. All right, so two down, one to go. This one involves the word crushed in all caps. So
yes. Yeah. So unfortunately, I have to report that Lumo is getting crushed. That bioluminescent blob is being flattened and squished. But don't panic. Nothing can kill Lumo.
Yeah.
Lumo is being squished into vinyl. The vinyl is now starting to be pressed, and you can look more on.
Honestly, something, and this is going to sound so sick and twisted, but the idea of watching a little Lumo blob get squashed into a vinyl is like oddly satisfying. Can you remember like when Steve was showing the Falconeer vinyl pressing? It's something satisfying about it, isn't it? I don't know if it's like a textural thing, but you can imagine the Lumo little, the blobby little texture turning into a vinyl, can't you?
Yeah.
That's really visual.
Hopefully, I would assume Steve is probably going to do the same for the Lumo vinyl. I think there, you hit the nail on the head. You squashed the Lumo on the head. There is something very satisfying about watching that process happen. Have you ever fallen down that YouTube rabbit hole of those videos where it's just like, oh, watch this brick be crushed by a pneumatic drill, and now watch this metal
will
bar.
Will it blend type stuff, isn't it?
It's so good. So good.
It's like that, but more less destructive, more creative, you know?
Yeah.
So I can imagine if we did squish a Lumo into like an impossibly flat pancake shape, that it would have a sort of musical undertone. So
yeah, it'd be like...
So the presses are happening. The vinyl is in the works.
If there are any kids listening, Lumo is safe.
No Lumos were harmed in the making of these vinyls. Let's just put that out there. So I mean, and if there are any kids, oh please. All right. Well, listen. you're going to click off this. Listen. Thank you very much, Aaron. It's good to have the real king of the propaganda mission, the crusade on our case. We're gonna speak to John Robinson in just a few minutes, but before that, we've got a smattering of internet news that Aaron has collated from various sources across the internet, which we now bring in with a jingle.
News Weekstall from Google.
It's a very formal introduction to that segment, then. I feel like it was a 1,000-gun salute kind of thing, which we now kickstart with the jingle.
You've picked this up so much now.
Exactly. So, honestly, John Robinson, I'm doing all the voices and that as well in my head, so look forward to that in just a few. But, okay, what have we got, Aaron? What have you brought to the table this week from across the internet?
Jake, what the frig is going on with Nintendo? What the frick is going on? Not in general.
Listen, it's not
E3 time. It's usually the time that I get excited because I love Nintendo and they are my tiny... A good Nintendo E3 Direct is my solace. Do you know what I mean? It gives me life. It gives me purpose to continue on just existing.
So this is how fast Nintendo work, people. Since Aaron wrote this, Nintendo did a Direct, but with a caveat of it was entirely focused around Xenoblade Chronicles 3. So at that point, is it just a video?
I think it's... because they've done title-focused ones in the past, like on Splatoon and things like that. I think it is... hey, this game is out next month, so here is a 20-minute deep dive rundown of everything you need to know about the game, because it's a massive, you know, massive time sink of an RPG. And, you know, every Xenoblade game, it kind of reiterates and refreshes its combat and things like that. So I think this is just their way to say, let's just give you a picture of what this game actually is, and now you can go forward, get excited with enough information to say, hey, I want to buy this.
Yeah. And still, we're not counting that as a direct, are we? That's not what you mean when you say direct.
Don't get me wrong, I'm excited. Straight after we've finished recording this, I'm going to go watch it. Because I am excited for it. But do we think there is still hope that before the month is out, there will be Nintendo Direct?
The month, maybe not. July? I hope so. It's a bit of a weird one, isn't it? But yeah, Nintendo really just... dance to their own tune, and they always will. But look, like, the streets need it. It's what the people demand. We've found a lot of this lately with Nintendo. They've been a lot, you know, in fact, like, basically they've given us a lot, and yet people are still hungry. And I tell you what I mean. Like, they did the Indie Direct. Should we have been grateful? Yes. Were we? Yeah, a bit. And then there was the Pokemon Direct. Cool.
Yes.
Yeah, everyone likes it. Then there's a 20-minute Xenoblade Direct. Cool. But... come on, give us the little highlight reel, you know, give us the little, making another Donkey Kong and Pikmin and Metroid and Zelda, you know.
So here's the thing, right?
Am I?
I obviously, who wouldn't love that? But Nintendo do have a... their tactic does seem to be, let's talk about things in six-month chunks. And I don't know if that is because they got bit in the past where they're like, hey, here's a logo at Jeff Keighley's show for Metroid Prime 4. Fast forward a year, and it's like, sorry, we are cancelling this game, and development is restarting from scratch. So I don't know. And Bayonetta 3 as well. They're like, yeah, Bayonetta 3. And then, 3 years later or however long it's been, it's like, okay. So I think it makes a lot of sense that they are trying to keep things within, okay, here's what you can expect in the next 6 months. Because if they dish everything out right now, hey, here's a new Donkey Kong, here's a new F-Zero, blah, 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 blah. By the time you get to September, where you probably want a bit of a refresh, a bit more Nintendo Direct love.
Yeah.
What can they say rather than saying this is a bit more information on this game, this is a bit more information on that game? So I think I am under the impression that we will get a Nintendo Direct either next week.
Yeah.
I'm going to say next week.
Well, yeah, and I wonder how far ahead, because we kind of know what's on the roster for the next six months. So, it'll have to be beyond. But, we'll talk about it a little bit later, hopefully. But one thing I liked about Microsoft's E3 stuff was that it was like everything that you see here, and we mean everything, will be available in the next 12 months. And I think that's kind of the way things kind of need to go. And it's what, again, Nintendo were doing it before everyone else by saying, here's the next 6 months for us, So. So, we'll hold out hope. And listen, of course, if it happens, we will discuss it right here. So, Nintendo adjacent news, I suppose, in our next.
And E3 adjacent news, I guess. PlayStation, Nintendo, Activision, Blizzard, and Take-Two have announced, a few of the companies that have announced that they are not going to be attending Gamescom this year, which for me is a big sad face.
Yeah.
Well, that's not a sad face. That was a duck face. Anyway. what do you think this means for Gamescom? But also, I guess, a wider state of play on, is this due to people potentially having not so much content or time to develop, demos for a show floor? Or do you think it's a lack of belief in, Gamescom attendance and things like that? I mean, where's your head at?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because I can kind of see both things that you mentioned there, like PlayStation specifically, like what have they got on the way? Hard pressed to find PlayStation VR 2, God of War. And then they've got like stuff that we know is going to be ages away, like there's like a Wolverine game and stuff like that. So it's like, what are they going to have that's like playable, like hands on playable, for consumers to get excited about at Gamescom that's out this Christmas? Like, I'm a big PlayStation head, and I couldn't really tell you, mate, to be honest. So I can see that Blizzard have just, they got their own things going on, but they just launched that big mobile game, Diablo Immortal or whatever. So again, like, what are they up to? Well, they've kind of got Overwatch 2, but that's going to be free to play and out like the week after Gamescom. So I was expecting at least that. Like, hang on, I'll just make sure I've got that right. They've got a beta, a playable beta of the multiplayer available, and it's gonna be June 28th, so very, very soon. So Overwatch 2 is, so by the time you listen to this, it's just a few days away. There's going to be a beta for that, and I think the full game launches just a few months later, because the beta is on for a month, the 28th of June to the 18th of July, for anyone that wants to know about that. And I was kind of thinking something like that would be there, from them. So
it's a big IP, and I don't know if this is just me, if I've just been out of the loop for a while, but regarding Overwatch 2, and sorry, no, this isn't the Overwatch 2 section. Do you feel and see the hype still there?
No, I don't.
No,
really. I've really level-headed on this, like, not really on the Overwatch train. I had a lot of friends that were, but I was not really in it myself. But yeah, I'm not bitter about it. Like some people are like, you know, they don't like Apex because they play Fortnite or blah, blah, blah. So I've got no horse in the race. But I think Overwatch and it's, yeah.
Because usually, I remember throughout the original Overwatch campaign for pretty much the entirety of its life, and it's still going now. But, you know, it was, I would go onto Twitter and just see nothing but Overwatch. And I feel like I'm personally not seeing a lot of, because it looks good. And it's like, hey, here's more Overwatch. Here's a few new tweaks and changes, yada, yada. Mm. So I'm just like, well, that's a bit confusing. And then to not, you know, stake your claim at Gamescom, even, you know, that is one of those games that, you know, when you go to a game convention on the show floor, there is always that one massive booth of a game that came, that's already out.
Yeah.
Or it's just about to come out.
Yeah.
I would have thought Overwatch, that would be that game, unless they're doing like a hardware partnership or something. I don't know.
Yeah, honestly, I know what you mean. Like last convention I went to in the UK was EGX, which was very, very small this year, but they had like Fall Guys. That was that game. But I know what you mean. Like the entirety of its run, people were still talking about the new heroes. Like it really had everybody eating out of the palm of their hand, you know? So with this, I find it so strange that it's almost the complete opposite. So look, like, I mean, I've seen the criticism online, and like I say, I have no personal thoughts on it, but from what I understand, people are saying it's so too similar. Like it's 1.5 to the point it could have just been an expansion, and certainly in terms of the PvP. So
yeah,
interested, but yeah. So I guess we won't find out at Gamescom, and I wonder if it's simply for these big companies who are very liable to all sorts of lawsuits and potential, you know, issues like that. If it's a bit too early, given the pandemic climate and stuff like that, they don't want to, you know, risk it. They didn't trial PAX East. You know, we were there. We saw what it was like. Some people went, some didn't, and I don't think I think it's a mix of that, but I don't think that many of these have got games to show. Couldn't tell you what Take-Two is showing.
No, that is a bit of a funny one. Obviously, they've just launched The Quarry, you know, NBA, WWE, that is what it is.
That's flipping 2K, isn't it?
Take-Two. 2K, Take-Two, yeah, Rockstar.
Yeah, exactly. So I was thinking bigger, like 2K, fine. Take-Two, Rockstar, well,
Table Tennis 2, man.
So even if we take 2K out of the picture, you're right. And I guess if Take-Two were going to do anything, it would have to be 2K, wouldn't it? Because Rockstar just don't make games. They make one every like millennium, and it's always the big one, but like, they don't do this, you know?
It's very weird for me as well, because like especially for Take-Two as well. So, you know, if you look at E3's past, and you look at the show floors for the map, and you look at shows where there are no 2K or Rockstar game announcements, Take-Two would still usually have a very big booth space, and they'll just use it to hold private meetings and things like that. But you know, and that is, you know, it's an expensive show to be at E3, so I'm confused that they still wouldn't do something at Gamescom. But this is post-pandemic, right? So I guess a lot of priorities and the way companies function now has changed quite a bit. So
yeah, and again, I think we're constantly going to be looking at the sort of the state of things and comparing them to the years prior. And it's so difficult for us at the moment because we're trying to compare it to the ever-changing world of games in general, but now we've got the pandemic aspects to factor in. So it's always difficult to gauge, is it this or is it simply down to that? You know, like, because of the pandemic, that's caused delays and knock. So yeah, oh man, like, interesting. I mean, Gamescom, they say, you know, so people at home, like, just as a sort of the flip side of this, Gamescom say that 250. Yeah. So I was just Googling it then. 250 companies are attending. So let's see. We know that they're not one of them. But I wonder if PlayStation or Blizzard or Nintendo will have any sort of digital presence through Jeff Keighley's Gamescom opening night live. Does that count as Gamescom? Well, we'll find out, won't we? So
you're gonna be at Gamescom though.
I am. Yeah, exactly. So you can come and see me. I have.
And me.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, Aaron's there. We've got as many games to show as PlayStation. Personally, like, you know, yeah, come and say hello. We'll talk more about that as we get closer to the date for the folks at home. Now, there's one bit of news left, and I think it's a really nice thing. I think there'll be people at home who will have been missing your say on the events of last week. Certainly me. So I
felt that I missed out and I needed some E3, non-E3 talk. And I want to just have a conversation between us of like, what was your moment? Like, what has been your game? What has stood out to you? Personally, what was your jam?
It's been weird because I had an immediate thing that I was like looking forward to, and then there was like surprises and stuff like that. So I think for me, like, this answer is not straightforward. The game that I was most excited to see was very, very weird, and there was an update to this game that I happen to have been playing the last 2 weeks called Core Keeper.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, cool game.
Yeah, it's really wicked, like really, really wicked game. And for those that don't know what it is, it's a bit like, kind of imagine like a top-down Terraria, or I can get a little bit more, I think of it like Stardew Valley meets Minecraft, you know? Yeah. And I love it. I absolutely love it. Funnily enough, just before me and I...
Sold out game. Like Fireshine.
That's it. So fantastic little game. And they happen to have an update the following week. And they were like, we're going to show it at E3. So I was just like really excited that, because I could look at something I already like, get excited for it, and then the thing that I'm seeing and getting excited for would be available to me within four days. So that's
really cool.
So you see what I'm saying? Yeah. So that in it way was good. There was another game that really looked good, but it has the name has kind of eluded me, because there was quite a few of them that looked a bit similar, and that's probably sounds a little bit sounds derogatory to say it looks the same.
Was it in any sort of presentation? Or?
Yeah, there was Flintlock that looked pretty
Flintlock.
Good. Did you see that?
I saw that the little wolf fox. God.
Yeah, there was. Yeah, I know yeah, yeah. There was. Oh, it was like Nightingale. Did you see this? It's. Yeah. It was.
Yes.
Yeah. Nightingale. That's the name of the game. Sorry. And I think what confused me is someone had a flintlock pistol in the picture. So so Nightingale looks like kind of like a hunt showdown type game. The thing is, yeah, like at the moment, I don't know what the hell's going on with my brain, but I hate all these like Rust, Ark, Raft. You know, all these early access survival crafting, open world, only fun if you play with your friends, because the game is quite bare bones when you play by yourself, make your own fun type games.
Yeah.
And yet, lately, I've just had a real, real hunger for them. So I just went about Core Keeper, that element as crafting, the survival. And Ark became free to download on your Steam library over the weekend, and you get to keep it. So this Nightingale is a nice mix of this, like, PvE early access stuff, and the graphics are just enough for me. It looked a little bit like Amazon's New World, that like Frontiersman. Yeah. That is that era. It's PvE crafting, but with these cool looking creatures that look like, they don't look like fantastical. They're not like, you know, they look just realistic enough to imagine that they could have existed. But so I really like the look of that Nightingale, because honestly, I think these types of games are the ones that over the years, when I'm playing with my friends now, they're the ones I remember because they're so anecdotal. Like, you know, something happened to us in Core Keeper that was funny, but you had to be there. And Valheim's another game where it's only like only you are experiencing like the certain things, like a troll comes and smashes your raft. So for me, like, that was a little nice surprise. And then I got to see a bit more of Hollow Knight Silksong, which I really liked. Yes. So that was one. And then the one...
What a surprise as part of the Xbox thing, eh?
Yeah, right? I was cool. Almost a dead cert.
It's like, yeah, I get to see more of it. I'm happy.
Yeah, yeah. No release date or anything, but it was good to see more. And the game that I wanted to see there a lot more, it wasn't a surprise because they announced it was going to be there, was the Callisto Protocol, which is the Dead Space creators. Yeah. Don't call it a Dead Space game. It was one of the many, many space games. And you got to see a full, fat, very visceral look at the game. And it's out in December, which you can't ask for more. Let me see the game. Let me see it, how it plays. Let me see the tone. Tell me when it is. Oh, it's not that far. So, yeah, it was a Callisto Protocol, this Core Keeper update, and Nightingale. What about you, man? What was it for you? There's probably a few too, right?
So, I am genuinely actually excited for Callisto Protocol. Mm-hmm. I love Dead Space. Back in the day, and I know that the Dead Space remakes come in and stuff, which is cool. Yeah. But this is new and fresh and something new in terms of story, and it's a whole new experience. And Glenn Schofield is a cool guy. I think watching that, I thought that one, the video could have done with a voiceover to explain what was going on. And two, I think the video could have been cut better. I don't think the game looked so optimized as it could be. And I know it's early and it's not out until December. And, I still think it's got a lot of promise. And I know that those things are going to be tweaked, changed, ironed out and massaged out and whatnot.
Yeah.
But I don't think it did any favors to the game.
You're dead right. You are right. Yeah.
The one thing that I did like that looked absolutely fantastic was when the character got sucked into the blender at the end.
Yeah, of course.
I was like, wow, that looks so good. And the camera goes in and everything. You're like, yeah, this is more of that. I was like, that bit ran great. But I think for me, the biggest surprise has probably been Final Fantasy Rebirth, Square Enix's presentation the other day.
Yeah, it certainly was. I didn't know whether I was including that in E3, but you're dead right. Yeah, so that. Oh, how do you feel about this? Because I've got very, a lot of emotions, man.
So I have conflicting thoughts and feelings over Final Fantasy VII Remake. Like, I thought it started out great. It looks good. The combat was fun. And then, the ending, the final... 3 hours of the game is quite entertaining, and they just flip the script on its head by the end of the game, right? In terms of they're like,
yeah,
this is going to be a fun onward journey for everyone, no matter how much you have devoured the original Final Fantasy VII, which is cool. However, I found the actual core of the game, the actual backbone of the middle section of the game to be quite boring and repetitive and slow.
Okay,
but because of the power of the ending, I was like, whoa, what a game. And don't get me wrong, you have to remember that Square Enix, Final Fantasy VII Remake was being made by A-Team. And then similar to the Metroid situation, Square Enix came in and said, yeah, it's not up to our standards, so we're going to take this and continue and finish development. And I'd imagine they hodgepodged what was there and fitted some things in to make the game work as quick as they can, because they don't have another 5 years to make a game from scratch. What I like about this one, Rebirth, the new one, is they have dove in with the trailer of what I mentioned about the ending of Remake. And it's like, ask yourself all these questions. But what I do like about the game is, from the few scenes that we have seen, it appears that they are opening up the world. So it doesn't feel like you are just in corridors all the time. Because I think that was the biggest thing, that you're in Midgar and... basically, anywhere you want to go is down a corridor. Oh, I'll squeeze through this gap to hide the loading time and carry on.
Yeah.
I like that it looks a bit more open. I have no idea how they are going to continue progression from those who played Remake. You know, do you carry over your levels and your materia and all that stuff, or do they find a way to say, nah, this starts from scratch again? And then obviously as part of that, they said, hey, this is going to be a three-game trilogy, and there's a third game that will be coming that is unnamed. And then how do they do that again?
Yeah.
So I'm curious functionally how it works. But I was quite impressed by, you know, their presentation. It was like short. It was like 15 minutes, I guess. Yeah. And we're like, here's a cool mobile game if you play mobile games. Here is a remake of Crisis Core. If you didn't play this on the PSP, I think it was. Now's your chance, and you can play it on its glory and find out this cool part of the story. And then here is a look at, you know, what you all want to play next year, Final Fantasy Remake Part 2.
I enjoyed it. I am like, you know, when it ended, Final Fantasy VII, I was like, yes, do that. Then when I saw this, I was like, not like that. Go back. because to put it completely bluntly, what the changes that they're making or whatever, fine. However, it's a remake of Final Fantasy. So what I want to see is the places, the characters, and all that. So Midgar, the first game of the three games they're making, takes place in essentially the prologue. So if you cut out all of the like rubbish towns that no one cares about, there's 13 main towns in the whole of Final Fantasy VII, a huge overworld map, loads of set pieces. How are they putting all of the others in those two games? Well, I can tell you right now, they can't. There's no way.
It's not going to happen. No.
So I'm so sad that now what this is it's a reinterpretation, isn't it? And I'm upset because I really wanted to experience Junyuan, Wu Tai, Fort Condor, Calm, all of that, the Golden Saucer. Like, and it's full. Oh, and I know what you're all going to say. Jake, play Final Fantasy 14. I already am. Stop it. But I was really, 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 really wanting all of the locations full. Cosmo Canyon, the caves underneath Cosmo Canyon, all of that, the deep, I've been dreaming about that day, and now I know I'm not getting it because there's no way on planet Earth, right? I actually did all the math in my head before we came on, thinking if it takes Midgar, if Midgar's 5 hours, but in the game it's 30 hours, and then your time's all that, it means that they're going to need 150 hours of story content over the two games. No one's making 75 hours story content these days. Nobody. Main story content, 75 hours at a disc. No one's doing it, apart from what Red Dead Redemption 2, which took about 50 years. So look, like, that's my opinion on it. Like, I'm happy for it to be a cover version, but I'm sad that ultimately, I don't want to say they're cutting corners, but I'm just saying that the bold decisions that they've made are too bold for my taste. That's the best way of saying it, isn't it? Yeah. That's how I really feel.
So there are some things that also, there are some places that you could visit that might not make sense given the state of the story currently. And I am intrigued, but I really do understand what you're saying as well, because, you know, they have just gone in the trailer, they're like, oh, what is Sephiroth's endgame? And, you know, he's walking alongside Cloud, but in that scene, I actually think that you're playing as Sephiroth then.
Very good.
But, you know, they put all these questions in your face and they say, what is fact and what is fiction?
And I was like thinking, what they're asking, I really wanted that to be non-f-withable. I really wanted that to be, that's going to happen no matter what. And I kind of thought that the story was going to go, do what you want to do, try and beat that, but you can't. Yeah. And so, you know, it's my expectation.
I think that is still going to happen, you know. I think everyone's like, oh yeah, Aeris is safe now. Mm-hmm. But I still think they are going to pull the rug of the unsuspecting people by still doing it anyway.
I really hope so. But look, so I'm glad that, you know, you've had some strong feelings about it, and you watched a lot of trailers, and that was the one that stood out, and it shows the power of that game specifically, like, honestly. So there was loads on, honestly, you know, we'll have to, you know, over time, over the next... This is a beautiful thing about this year's E3. Quite a lot of the offerings are out over the next few weeks. So, you know, we'll talk about the Overwatch beta and how that is just a few in just a few weeks. So before we hand you over to John Robertson, let's just take a moment to prepare ourselves because this is a doozy.
You awake to find yourself in a dark room.
Just before, so for anybody listening, we are in a dark room. And for the video viewers, I'm sorry, I've lied. Okay, this is the interview section with the legend, John Robertson.
Darrens, if you do not like, subscribe and leave a note and a nice review for this podcast, I shall be forced to shove a flamboyant potato where the sun don't shine.
John's going to kill me for these, honestly.
Wired Unplugged.
Well, here we are in the interview segment, and I'm joined by John Robertson in... Well, look, I'm sure everyone's said this to you before. Look, we're in a room that's quite well lit, to be honest, but...
Yes!
You know, you're in my domain now. The domain of
the
light. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God, no, I can't. Look, I'm a bloody gamer. I don't exist in light or sunshine. I shouldn't be seen. I should be a series of words that appear on a screen. GG, noob.
Well, listen, John, it's really good to have you on the podcast. Like, you know what? When I say a bit of a cult hit, I mean that in a sort of sacrificial way as well as like following way. But
in a sacrificial way, that's the most frightening thing anyone's ever said.
I'll tell you what, I've been kind of immersing myself in Darkroom all day today. So okay. There's a lot of esoteric subconscious thoughts that are just running through my brain, basically. I've been really doing my best, you know.
Well, after you've committed the massacre, please don't mention me in your manifesto.
Yeah, right. Well, so for those that don't know who you are, John, in your own words, who are you and what is it that you do on the internet?
I'm John Robertson. I stream at twitch.tv/Robotron. I created a show called The Dark Room, which is the world's only live-action video game, which is really just an intensely sadistic, interactive game show that I play touring around. I'm somebody who came up with a really silly idea 10 years ago, and God bless people's tolerance for me and that crap idea.
Honestly, like, I've got to say, the idea has done very, very well over, you know, a long period of time, but so is League of Legends, mate, so don't worry about it.
I don't have their money, but thank you. Yeah, it's me and League of Legends, pal. Yeah, it's good.
Setting you up here, aren't I, really, to be honest. No,
that's awesome. I'm just looking around this flat like, yeah, I'm fairly certain this rent is killing me. But yeah, no worries. No worries.
Well, listen, man, it's a pleasure because if the accent doesn't give it away... you're not originally from the UK, but I feel like you could probably apply for lordship here at least or something. Everybody in the UK games industry knows of you and the Dark Room. To be completely honest, it's like it becomes a bit of a staple of like gaming conventions and things like that. If you're for those internationally listening, if you're at like the equivalent of like PAX over here in the UK, like EGX or Insomnia or stuff like that. There's always something. There's always something. I described you a little bit earlier off this podcast as a bit of like a, you know, spectral figure kind of skulking about, you know, and just like getting people all ready to rock with the Dark Room. And I think that that's pretty on brand, man, because like the Dark Room is kind of cool, but it is kind of dark. Like it's
it's a brutal heavy metal, you know, real kick in the teeth kind of game show. It's yeah, I'm just incredibly pleased that you've said that because, like, in my mind, I'm like, yeah, a lot of people have been called a fuckhead by me while I'm on stage. That's sort of what I do. You know, like, I'm, you know, like, I like, for anyone who doesn't know any of this, like, what he's talking about is the show is me, but instead of being an Australian man, I am this colossal British psychopath wearing weird cyberpunk armor. And there are options that get, you know, projected on the screen. People call out what they want, like it's an old text adventure. Mm. But now we've sort of like, we've consumed all of gaming. So we're doing parodies of Elden Ring and D&D stuff. And it just boils down to people telling me stuff they like and me telling them that they're wrong and then throwing terrible prizes at them. And people have just treated me really well. Like kind of like you would a psychopath who shows up and refuses to leave. So.
Yeah. Well, look, honestly, I mean, it's the point where you've got this, the ad lib chops here that it constantly shifts and changes. Like you say, Elden Ring and like really topical things
can come up, you know.
Oh, and any time. I mean, like the thing that I'm doing at the moment is just we've got this really long riff on DLC, and my favorite bit of improv at the moment is what we call premium stupid hat mode.
Yeah.
Right, which is great. We just go, right, you want premium? And you know, people get very excited. And what you do is you just go, right, who's got a hat? And somebody will bring you a hat. And then you go, who's got money? And you get like 20 quid. And then you just keep the money and put the hat on and go, premium stupid hat mode. And then you can watch the guy at the end of the show going, do I get the money back? It's like, no, I'm EA. I'm keeping it. What do you mean you feel ripped off?
This is why I said it's you and League of Legends earlier, remember?
Yeah, oh, straight up there.
Basically. Yeah.
You Johnny know, Microtransaction Robertson, they call me.
No.
Exploiting the kids. Woo!
Now, you know, the thing for me is I've been playing video games my whole life. I actually, you know, really started on like the sepia sort of Game Boy, you know, and then SNES and whatnot. So I kind of missed like the text adventure stuff. So for me, it reminded me of like those choose your own adventure, premium rate telephone line games that you used to, you know, like on the TV. So do you know, I don't know if you've ever seen that, but like,
No. I've only ever seen Limmy parodying it.
Well, I was about to ask, have you seen, have you seen Adventure Call and crucially Falconhoof? Do you reckon Falconhoof would survive the Dark Room?
No, fuck no. Falconhoof couldn't survive Limmy's show. I stream on Twitch and Limmy raids occasionally, and we could usually tell right around the time he showed up, because suddenly, like if I'm doing Dark Room or something, suddenly the chat just fills up with several thousand people writing, kill Jester.
Yeah.
And it's bloody awesome. He was the first comedian I saw upon getting over here. Couldn't believe it. Like, we're up in Glasgow, and this bloke just goes, oh, get a load of this. You'll have never seen anything like it. I was like, this is fucking fantastic.
Well, actually, yeah. I'm really glad that there's a bit of a acknowledgement there, because yeah, you're so both come from essentially a stand-up background, but have both found a comfortable home on Twitch, which is you know, I can through like, you know, I guess Limmy's like Twitter threads and stuff like that, and timeline, which is just good luck to everybody just getting into that. I can see that he does retweet other comedians that are on Twitch, and it really is kind of a thing. So I was wondering, like, you know, if you can remember a time when you discovered Twitch. Can you remember like where it was or anything like
that? Yeah, I know exactly where I was when I discovered Twitch. And this is going to get a little, you know, dark for a second. What had happened was I'd come back. I'd gone to Western Australia for my best friend's funeral, and I'd come back, right? And it wasn't in a terrific state. And I worked for Jinx TV at the time. I was doing a show called Video Game Nation, and they had a Twitch account. And we were talking about the Dark Room, and they went, oh, you should really do that on Twitch. Like, and we were figuring out how to rig it up. And then Twitch got a hold of it, and they went, gee, that sounds good. We'll give you like UK and Europe front page, right? And they gave it. So the very first time I was ever on Twitch, ever, was talking to like 4,000 people every second and just riffing away. And we did that show, and I dedicated it to her. Mm-hmm. And that was interesting too, because like you think about, because I bloody love Twitch. I love everything you can do with it. And I love, you know, I love getting, you know, into the hard and fast of it and dealing with American teenagers who, once they've said crackhead, they don't actually have anything left. They've got nothing left. And they're always astonished. Like, the streamer spoke to me. How did that happen? You can't say that about my mum. Like, I've watched simple your mum jokes just completely, you know, befuddle kids from LA who's like, what is this? But, well, also, any time you see me on Twitch front page, if I seem like I'm doing some brutal stuff, I'm doing a charity show, so my bad behavior is temporarily justified.
Yeah, right? For a good cause. Bad behavior for a good cause. Yeah.
Well, that's something I've literally said. It's like, you're heckling a charity show, you stupid fuckwit. I'm going to kick you in the throat. And then, of course, you have to go, of course, Twitch's terms of service mean that you can't make plausible threats. I'll never be able to find your throat. I don't know where you live. I'm a very short man, little legs.
In a video game. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. In a beautifully rendered video game. Oh, I don't play video games with good enough graphics for next to be visible. I'm an N64 man. Anyway. So the very first time we were on Twitch, it was doing that.
Yeah.
And what really got me, and it was really nice, is every time that I started a new hour, because we did it for 4 hours, and I would explain why we were there, and I would explain why I was doing it, this wall of chat would appear where people genuinely were upset for my friend. And that was really beautiful. Like, and seriously, like, no bullshit. Nobody was a prick in those moments, right?
Yeah.
It, like, they all took it and it's good. And it was when I was actually playing that I still remember the classic moment where a guy just wrote in all caps, "Reported for non-gaming content." And I was like, that is the saddest man having an aneurysm. It was beautiful.
Yeah. Honestly, like, you know, I was really curious to see, you know, how you thought about that. And I guess we've kind of got a bit of an insight into it there because, you know, Twitch compared to like touring, for example, must be so different because essentially it's not always the same and it's a cumulative, but you almost have the same live audience night after night. Whereas if you did a show, let's say in Manchester and then you went to London and it was the complete same people with, you know, 20 extra, it'd probably be a lot different. So there's also a lot more opportunity for back and forth. Like you just mentioned then, there was a lot of people speaking in solidarity at the time on Twitch. Was imagine that in a live show, people just going, yes, yes, I agree, yes.
Or they do that.
You know,
yeah, like, well, that's when you get that great feeling that you're hosting a rally. And usually when my shows end up like that, I'm like, it's gone well. If you know, that's a great feeling. You're like, now, folks, now we storm the Bastille. Yes.
I'm
more likely to storm Baskin Robbins, but nevertheless, you know what I mean? Like,
So is it how have you noticed what's it like to sort of, you know, be on Twitch and see the same faces like time and time again and like have a parasocial relationship in a way?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like it's an interesting thing because like when we do big shows on Twitch, that's got a real feel of we're doing a spectacle, you know?
Yeah.
And that's where, yeah, you know, it's funny because it's like, imagine having a heckler who you can just get rid of with, you don't even have to press the button. Someone else does it for you.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
An ejector seat.
You've already hurt their feelings and then they're gone. And then about 10 minutes later, somebody comes back with a curiously similar username. And it never really gets you down because you're like, my God, the sadness of this. This is amazing.
Yeah. It's kind of like the equivalent of the heckler being kicked out and then coming back in with a fake mustache.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is. I like, it's me, Mr. Snrub, you know, like all that. So that's always very, very funny. Thing with like seeing the same people over and over again, which is a wonderful thing. We got a big, you know, big community and
you
know, bunches of folks come in. You build up a relationship with what they write and what they do. Like I've got people in my chat who have committed to a gimmick and they've committed to that gimmick for 2.5 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've got somebody who I at one point said their name sounded like a robot. So all they write in the chat is beep, boop, beep, boop over and over again. And then you've got other people who you're like, okay, you know, this guy's not having too crash hot a day. Now I can't go into that too heavily because I've still got to do a show. We've all got to have some fun, but you can wish that person well. And that's nice. You know, because like you don't get to do that in a 20-minute stand-up set. You never got, you know, like you're doing this town's shit. This place is awful. Sorry to hear it's gone badly for you. I hope things turn out okay. But, you know,
yeah.
But on Twitch you can, and it's really good fun. You know,
I can imagine it's well. It's quite empowering for the audience because Darkroom, you know, is very crowd participation driven, right?
Yeah.
And there are a lot of people there who are probably in the audience, kind of like, don't pick me. I'm here and I love it, but don't pick me. But if it was just simply via, you know, text chat, it can probably, you know, bring people out of their shell a bit and they can enjoy it a little bit more. Is that right to assume? Or?
Well, it's true. I mean, the thing is, like, when people do come to see it live, that joy of, oh, don't pick me. I don't pick people who don't want to be picked. 10 years of, you know, that moment of going, all right, that person's having an anxiety attack.
Yeah.
That guy's just hit me. You know, like these are all signs. Ah, maybe don't give those people a go. That cat that's hissing and spitting doesn't want to be patted. So don't pat the bloody cat, right?
Yeah, fantastic.
Whereas with Twitch, yeah, everyone can have a go. It brings everybody out. So when we do the shows live, yeah, you might get some people who, you know, like I do have people who say to me, oh yeah, I love your show. I sat at the back, didn't want to get picked, but they're really verbal on there. And as well, like, I mean, I don't want to get to like, you know, because I sound in this interview that I'm like, yeah, then I put people down, kick you in the throat, blah, 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 blah. But I am because I like, you know, playing with people and engaging with people.
Yeah.
It is about empowering them. And one of the really nice things about streaming on Twitch and doing my live shows and sometimes broadcasting the theater shows on Twitch is you get disabled people who could never see me live. You know, they'd never be able to get there. People in different countries, all this, yeah. And they're able to play and participate. And that ends up being beautiful. You know, even if that person on some level is a bit of a dick to you in the chat, yeah. At least they're getting the opportunity to do that.
Yeah.
You know, that's part of the human experience. It's great.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, in fact, a couple of episodes ago, we spoke to Safe in Our World.
Oh, yeah. We love those guys.
Yeah. And we discussed the sort of importance of video games in helping people with all sorts of, you know, disability and disorder find escapism, the same as people who aren't afflicted. And just a couple of weeks ago, we spoke to Special Effect, which is a lot more, you know, physical ailments there. And video games and escapism go hand in hand. So I hear what you're saying exactly. To talk about video games and, you know, the 80s text-based adventures, I was really curious. I've been asking everybody on this, you know, quite a few of the people we've interviewed work very closely in the video games industry. Developers, coders, you know, really in there. And then there's others who are working for, like, gaming-adjacent charities, like Safe in Our World or whatever. But one thing I've been trying to ask everybody is, well, can you remember the very first video game that really resonated with you? Maybe not the one that you saw. You might have walked past, like, Pac-Man or something and didn't care. But, like, in the first one that you were like, holy shit.
Yeah, well, look, I never, I'm very easily impressed, very easily impressed, especially as a kid. Like, I bought marketing 100%. Those shoes make you the fastest? Oh, those shoes had to be the best shoes that had ever existed.
Yeah.
And the first thing that really spoke to me, just because it was happening in front of me and it was, you know, it was right there, and this is terrible because I've played it subsequently and it's a terrible game, was Altered Beast.
Yeah, Altered Beast. Yeah. Altered Beast has such, like, it's iconic even now.
Yeah, wise from your grave.
Yeah, this is what I mean. Like, I in my head, I have fond memories of the game when I probably don't. Do you see what I mean? Yeah. Like,
that's it. Yeah, like, that was the first one that I actually got to get my hands on, right? It turns out, like, my parents have been taking me to video game arcades when I was a kid, but they never put any money in, right? And because they knew I didn't know how to read. So it didn't matter about the insert coin flashing. They're like, oh, good on you. You're doing it. You're doing it. Right. I was very easily misled. Yeah. But yeah, like, I remember Altered Beast was the first time I was like, wow, I'm this, you know, like, kind of, you know, getting all muscly. And then suddenly you're a wolf. And you're like, well, that's very cool.
Yeah.
And then after that, like, the one that sticks indelibly in my memory, because, like, I liked Sonic the Hedgehog and I wanted to be, you know, friends with all of his little mates and stuff like that. But with Street Fighter. Because you would walk into the arcade and you could hear Street Fighter wherever it was, you know, like the Dalzim's elephants, you know, all of this. Hadouken! Hadouken! Tiger! Tiger!
Yeah.
Incredible. And, you know, like, every kid at my school, even though none of them knew how to play, none of them could throw a Hadouken with any value, they could all say Yoga Fire and Yoga Flame.
Yeah.
You know, this was the stuff.
Yeah, honestly, you know, I sometimes make jokes to my kids about, like, you know, the Tiger Knee or whatever, and they just, they don't get it. And I'm like, I know you mean, like, it's still in my head, like the Dalsim chop and stuff. That's, that to me is very iconic. That's a really, so actually both very testosterone heavy games there. There's a lot of shredded dudes.
Oh, yeah.
Both bits, hell yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the first things that I ever really liked as a kid were all, like, my mum was watching this and she was just sort of like, oh, here comes the violence again. You know, like, just, oh, yes. Oh, for God's sake, he's watching the wrestling again. Yes, John, the Ninja Turtles have beaten up somebody. That was the fun bit. It was so enjoyable, you know. And then I'd go to school and discover that I wasn't the Ninja Turtles or the Altered Beast.
Yeah, that the hard way. Now, you know, I video games have changed a lot since then. I was curious to ask before we talk about some of your other pursuits, including the book and such, like, can you remember the last game that you played that you were really like, sometimes you catch yourself loving a video game, like going, oh my God, this is like mind blowing. Can you remember what the last one was?
Yeah. Oh, that's completely mind blowing. And this was mind blowing, not because, you know, not because it was in any way explosive or like really supercharged or technically innovative or anything. This was just me realizing my age, right? I had downloaded Civilization 5 and I got all of it and I put it on and the music came on and on came the opening and I realized that I had just discovered what was going to be my version of meditation, because I'm not a wind down guy. Like, I'm a I'm a high wired, you know, constantly caffeinated, always awake, million miles a second kind of a man. And so me essentially running what is a nuclear war is really restful.
Very good. Civilization five. Yeah.
Civilization five. I'm just like, I'm currently at war with Catherine the Great. And aside from that, I'm like, lovely music, beautiful colors. This is restful.
Absolutely. And funnily enough, I know exactly what you're on about. My brother is absolute same with like Total War. He'll just play that on a Sunday. And to him, he might, that's like gardening for him.
Yeah.
Apart from it's just, you know, sieges.
It's a Zen garden full of landmines. That's what it is.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a really good pick, to be honest. And the complete opposite of Altered Beast. So that's a nice little now.
Well, you want to think you've learnt something in 30 years, don't you?
If you said the last Street Fighter, that would have been different.
Well, that said, I mean, you know, like the last game I physically played, I did just play Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles: Shredder's Revenge. So things haven't changed that much.
Yeah. Well, they're all coming back, and that game has been doing really well, huh?
So. Oh, look. Well, when you're sitting there playing it with a mate of yours. And suddenly the screen starts scrolling down as they walk past an alley, and you're like, yeah, they first did that in Streets of Rage 2. Let me tell you something. Like, all right, John. Okay. Yeah. Not every thought has to leave the head, buddy.
Honestly, like, it's been nice to see the gaming community take on Darkroom because of its video game elements. But realistically, you know, the improv, I think, is what is the core. I don't know if the Darkroom could work if you weren't so sharp witted and stuff like that. And that comes from, well, probably you were just born with it, to be honest, mate. You know, I'm diagnosing you here, but I'm saying that like stand up certainly helped, I think, sharpen the tools, right? Now I believe, don't know if this is right or not, so you know, feel free to smite me, but an anime convention in Australia was the first like prototype for the Darkroom, I believe. Would you mind telling me a little bit about how that came about and how it went?
I'm happy to tell you. That was YCon in Perth, Western Australia. And if you like, upon hearing like the phrase like Western Australian Anime Convention in any way, think, oh, that's small. You know, like in any way, you're oh, that won't even be a hotel. That'll be a couple of rooms at a uni or something. Yeah. Now, this was at the Perth Convention Centre, which has a 3,000 seat theatre. And that used to get full for the cosplay competition. I used to host the cosplay. So when I went off to the Edinburgh Fringe first couple of times, I come back and they went, oh, didn't you just do a show about video games at the Fringe? And I did. It's called Dragon Punch, right? It was just about Street Fighter and stuff. Yeah. And they went, well, you know, like, come and do it. Do it on the Saturday night at the con. I was like, yeah, you beauty, you know. And they gave us the 3,000 seat theater. And we got about 1,500 people, you know, in to watch this thing, you know. And what happened was, they're a very unruly audience, the weebs, you know, like divorced from the body pillows. They're a bit set and ready, and people are yelling catchphrases from various animes, and subs not dubs is going on, and it's all happening, you know, it's all a thing. People are heckling me on Picto chat. That's how long ago this was, right? All of that. And I was having a top time, but show was getting a bit out of hand, and I thought, well, I've got this little 5-minute joke I've written about how crap old 80s video games used to be. And I start doing this routine about, you guys remember, don't you? When it was like this, you're weak to find yourself in a dark room. And what happens is, of course, you know, they've all been heckling and having fun. Well, they're gamers. So they start, they're like, is there a game on? They all start playing. They start playing a game that doesn't exist. So people are going, I escape. And I'm explaining why they don't. Goes back and forth. And I got all the lights turned off. And that bit went for 45 minutes. Like the show running time was doubled by doing that. And I went home and a mate of mine was like, well, that worked. And I was like, yeah, it was unexpected. Right. And when I got home, I checked my inbox and people were doing fan art of it. And I was like, oh fuck. Well, that's good. You can tell something's working. Right. Cause they, you know, like we'd had some really great shows, but no one was just going, fuck, here's some drawings, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Then I made a little YouTube adventure, you know, you click it all together. And that that went 2012 levels of viral. So that was, I got interviewed by Variety magazine and stuff. It was cool. Yeah, it was really fun. And then another mate of mine went, that Edinburgh Fringe you keep going to, you could probably do that as a show. We'll just code that for you. And I got a room at a place called The Hive, which is like one of Edinburgh's spongiest, floored, sweatiest, You know, like I remember I went dancing there one night. I tripped over something and it was someone's fucking can of Axe body spray. Right. Yeah. Like I love the Hive, but don't touch the floor. You'll get bloody lupus and that lupus will be pregnant. It's a horrific joint. And yeah, we did it there. And like my wife was said the other day, she's like, you remember the first time we did Darkroom and there were like four blokes there? And I went, yeah. And she was like, yeah, and it went for 20 minutes. Oh, yeah. And then she was just like, yeah, remember how the next day it was full? I was like, yeah, I remember. Because it like literally, we did the show for these four blokes. They went away. It had taken 20 minutes because I didn't really know what to do. So I just went, oh, they'll each have a go, right? And then literally I turned to my wife, and I'd been doing stand-up about, 9 years by that point.
Right.
So I turned to her and I just went, oh, that's got legs. Because it did. It just immediately like was working. And then, yeah, it was just crazy. And then off the back of that, you get 10 years of a career.
I love that. I was actually going to ask, you know, can you remember the first official one? And
yeah.
And how did that go? Well, the four bloke thing is...
It would have been probably something like August 1st, 2012.
Wow.
And it was, really, really great. And just like we gave we'd had these little badges made. We gave them each a badge and then, you know, ran out of badges the second day. You know, because everyone, you know, it was great.
It's
really good.
You know, like you mentioned, this has taken on, you know, an insane amount. It's still got momentum. You know, you did a show this week, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, I just did a show. Well, I did a show yesterday. I've got two more this week. The streaming goes on top of all of that. And then we're gearing up as the month goes on. I'm in Manchester and I'm in. I can't remember the other joint, but I'm in Manchester. Then we got Edinburgh Fringe. And then, bit of fun, flying back to Perth, Western Australia, because that anime convention has been replaced by another anime convention, and they're having the show in the venue. So there we go.
The circle of life. We did it.
Yeah, it's the circle of life, except for the part where I was banned from the venue last time. I was there for crowd surfing. And I intend to get banned a second time.
Oh, John's revenge. Listen.
Oh, yeah.
It's
bring
nice.
Me some stronger people to catch me this time. I killed three small girls last time. It's a real bummer in the footage.
That's the thing. All these weebs, man. So, listen, this is a sort of, you know, resurgence of live shows. How has it been getting back into the swing of things? Or because of Twitch, did it feel like you kind of never left? Because obviously we've had a pandemic on, you know.
Yeah. Oh, mate, I never left. Like, I never left. I was always performing. Like, and I still, like, even though I cut back some of my Twitch hours, right, I still stream 6 days a week, you know. Like, so I was always on and I was always performing live. And going back out was really super nice because a lot of people that you never seen before, but they've been through the Twitch are suddenly there and they're fun characters now, you know, and people who had been coming to the live shows and then supported me through Twitch are now back, you know, and then you get new people on top of that. And it's a magical feeling. Like I was just in, Leicester. I was just in Leicester the other day and you go out, you start doing the show. And just when I said one of the catchphrases of the show and 90% of the audience erupts with the noise and they all say it with you and you're just looking at these three blokes. It was great. There was a guy who looked like an end of game boss with two goons. Yeah. And I was like, you're the only three blokes who haven't seen the show, aren't you? And they really were. They were the only people who didn't know what the fuck was going on. And they were delighted by it, but it's good to watch that.
Yeah.
You know, you watch a whole room of people pop. It's like going to the wrestling and, you know, like there's one person going, who's this guy? And everyone, you know,
I think in a slightly more subdued version of the wrestling, I watched for the very first time in my life just a few months ago, Rocky Horror Picture Show, right?
Oh, yeah.
Which is kind of, you know, there's so much participation that if you've never seen it before, I was like, there's forks now, you know? But it doesn't take away from your enjoyment. It just gives you an extra level of like, what the fuck is going on? But if you know, that's kind of the point that when you're watching it, right? You know, so...
Now, exactly.
It's really cool to see that it's just as soon as the gates are open, you're out there doing it exactly how it is. But the Dark Room, like, isn't the only venture you've had. You've also, is it Penguin or is it Puffin? Like, they're the same thing, right? But Puffin is the subsidiary.
Puffin is the kids. Yeah, right. So Puffin is the young adult and the kids wing of Penguin.
That's it. Good use of the word wing there, by the way. Fantastic.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, slotted that one right in. Good on the branding.
Very,
dude,
very
that media
good.
Training's worked really well.
That is great. So let's talk a little bit about that. What's the little town of Morriville?
So the little town of Maryville reaches over, grabs copy that's actually just over there. Oh, wow, there is one. Oh, that is lucky. There we go. The Little Town of Maryville is my children's novel that Puffin was good enough to publish back in 2019. It's the start of a series. We eagerly await the other installments being commissioned. But that is the reviews that we've had in from Starburst magazine and the South China Morning Post, which was a bit of a surprise. I didn't know the book was available in Hong Kong, but it turned out it was.
Right. And yeah.
Got a bloody rave. People have been really nice. They're like, it gets comparisons to Roald Dahl and H.P. Lovecraft and Terry Pratchett. And these are three of my favorite things in the world. So
yeah.
I'm delighted. And yeah, it's like I wanted to write a kid's book that was exactly the kid's book I wanted to read when I was a kid. And I liked bad guys really getting theirs. You know, like, and I liked sinister weirdos who weren't always bad. And I liked, extreme cartoon violence. And yeah, and so I wrote this book where there's a 14-year-old girl called Aubrey's sister because her father won't give her a name, right? and her little brother Aubrey, and they get involved. They're pursued for their lives by a street gang because two cosmic pensioners appear out of nowhere, grind their father into mince, and then they eat him. So, it's the best kids book to start with cannibalism. It's bloody terrific. You know,
very good. No,
yeah, thank you. Yeah, we've just people when they write the reviews for it, the best one I've seen is somebody who went, "Warning: contains mild cannibalism."
Mild cannibalism is fantastic, isn't it?
Oh, it's a lovely thing. And also, like, I wrote it because I was looking at it and, you know, I was like, oh, I think this is funny. You know, I think it'll be all right. I gave it to the publishers. We had a meeting. Mm-hmm. It was a good meeting. They brought us in. And the head of Puffin, who, you know, has seen thousands of kids' books, said this was one of the nicest sentences I've ever heard. She went, "John, we have all read your book to our children. All of our children agree that the scene where the kids eat their father is the funniest scene. They like that very much. Please, John, please edit that scene so the children enjoy eating their father slightly less. We just want to sell the book to the Americans, John."
That is worth its weight in gold, isn't it?
It's gorgeous, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the Germans are aboard, John. The Brits are aboard. It's doing very well over. It's doing well in Hong Kong. But for God's sake, John, make the father taste bad or something.
Honestly, like, it was a surprise to see this. I didn't know about the book. And I looked and I was like, you know, I have two daughters. And one of them is like, morbid, you know, but in a way that kids are, you know what I mean? There's that dark side to it, and there's a lot of that is a very metal sensibility, right? And I'm just like, yeah, I don't know where to start with that now. There's maybe a couple of shows on Netflix that have got like a darkness to them, so I was looking like, this is great. So I was going to ask, like, is there more? But you kind of already, you know.
Well, yeah, the thing is, the second book's already planned out. Like, I know what's coming. I know some twists. I know, you know, some turns. I know the new big bad. I've created some characters that make me laugh, you know, and all of that. But the trick to that is we've just sold out the first printing of Maryville. It's going to the second print now. And it's just, we just keep ticking along. More people buy it. More word of mouth spreads. And eventually those nice people at Puffin go, oh, cool, here you go. Do another one. So.
Yeah,
we hustle away, baby.
That's how it works, huh? There we go. You heard it here first. Well, look, John, you know, we've got a very decent insight into pretty much all things Darkroom that you can disclose. So I'd like to give you the floor before we send you back into the abyss and me and Aaron just find this podcast. But I was going to ask one question to end it on. If you could describe the good ending in a sentence, what would it be?
Vicious. That would be the, not even a sentence. That is literally it. Vicious is the answer.
Really fucking great. Yeah. Like, honestly, this is, for the people that know, I tried. For those that don't worry about it. John Robertson, thank you very much for your time, man. I hope you have a really nice rest of your marathon of a tour. And can you just let the people know, if they're interested, where they can check you out?
100%. Yeah, if you want to come by, you could see me 90% of the time live down your face hole at twitch.tv/Robotron, R-O-B-B-O-T-R-O-N. I'm on Twitter at Robotron, and everything else you want to find is at www.thejohnrobertson.com, including all my tour dates and links to t-shirts and stuff and books and everything.
John, thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Wired Unplugged.
Well, that was John Robinson. You know,
that was something.
My favorite thing about that is how I gravitated towards drinking water out of a wine glass just so I could feel a little bit more eloquent in the man's presence.
Yeah.
He's a very sharp-witted individual, but look, I survived. Here I am, baby. So look, next week I'm away, and a week after Aaron's away, so we're going to leave you in some capable hands. We'll figure it all out as it comes together. But thank you very much for joining us, and I hope you enjoyed the interview, and I'm glad that you came back to give us your thoughts on E3, man. I was really curious, but I was like, if I talk to Aaron about it off the podcast, then I'll already know, but I wanted to keep it pure, so I'm glad that you shared that, and great to have you back, man. Thank you, everybody, for watching and listening. If you want to take part in the mind-melting, quite literally, Arcade Paradise reveal, 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 release date, release date, release date shenanigans, it's at WiredP. P4 Paradise. Yeah.
And that's June 29th.
Yes. Which is soon. June 29th. Which is soon. By the time I listen, it's very soon.
One day after the Overwatch 2 beta starts.
There we go. Yeah, exactly. And let's see which is better received. Anyway, goodbye.
Wired Unplugged.